Previously in Aethon Kiss by Alice Dale. David's separation from his wife didn't alter Pippa's feelings for him. But since he was still married, she decided to end their relationship. Meantime, in Buckland Hospital, the Christmas concert was a roaring success, including Craig singing. Now he and Pam kissed after every therapy session.
The week after Christmas, his surgeon, Dr. Roberts, sent for Craig and told him that, with the facilities available at Buckland, no further operations would be productive, and in any case he would have to wait for further healing of the damaged skin before the finishing touches could be done. Meantime, other servicemen with life-threatening injuries kept coming in. "And you need my bed," Craig completed for him. "Exactly. Nurse Walters tells me you have a very caring mother, dying to look after you. And I'm sure she needs you after losing her husband. You're luckier than some who have lost their whole families in one bombing or another." "When should I go?" Craig asked, dreading the answer. "Whenever you like. We'll pay your fare home, of course, and you'll have your demob pay. That won't amount to much after less than 2 years in the RAF. It'll see you through till you get a job. Any idea what you'd like to do?" "I'd always thought if I survived the war I'd become an airline pilot. Not much hope of that now. Perhaps you could sing professionally. You've got a superb voice. Appear in public with this face?" he asked bitterly. "Your treatments aren't complete, Craig. You can have more surgery later. There's an amazing doctor, Tom Gibson, at the Glasgow Royal Infirmary. He's just started experimenting on tissue transplanting. He specialises in burns victims." "Tissue transplanting? I've never heard of that." "It's a very new idea. He removes skin from a healthy part of the body and transplants it to replace the damaged skin. If he'll take you on, and I'm sure he will, the end result will be better than anything I could do for you. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at how effective it is. I'll give you a referral to him." Craig stood, stunned, his mouth slightly open but making no attempt to reply. So Dr. Roberts wound up the conversation. "Well, all the very best." He rose and offered his hand, palm up, knowing Craig could not yet grip. Craig laid his hand on the doctor's, who said, "You deserve lots of good luck, Craig." "Thank you, sir." Craig left the consulting room. Outside, he leant against the wall, breathing heavily. His thoughts were in turmoil. Skin transplanting? Unexpected discharge from the hospital, where he'd lived for what seemed a lifetime? It was all too much, and happening so suddenly. What to do now? He had to go, that was obvious. But he couldn't bear the thought of leaving Pamela. A sudden depression gripped him and convinced him their love couldn't survive separation. How could any beautiful young girl love a freak like him? She was just a kind, caring nurse who gave all her patients courage and hope by flirting with them and persuading them that their various afflictions made no difference. that they were still the same attractive men they always had been. She had assured him that while she cared equally for all her patients, he was the only one she had ever kissed. He had believed her at the time, and it worked wonders. Now it was over. Not his love for her, but the stupid hope he'd had that there might be a future for them together. The day he left, Pamela accompanied him to the bus stop, where he stood rigidly staring ahead, avoiding making eye contact with her. She slipped her hand into his and, trying at first to be light-hearted, said,
"Thanks for being my guinea pig."
When there was no reaction, she spoke more seriously.
"I'll never forget you, Craig. I love you."
"So does my mother. She'll be glad to see me," he said briskly.
"You know I don't mean that kind of love."
His twisted smile was a question mark.
"You don't believe me, but it's true."
She held his face between her hands to secure his attention.
"I've already told you I love you, but you've never said it back. I know you do. I can see it in your eyes. Listen, if you can't say it, for God's sake, write it. But you must be the first to write, to show you believe me and want me."
He nodded unconvincingly.
"And if you do, I'll come to you."
"Here's the bus," he interrupted. As it slowed an approach, she said quickly,
"I mean it. I'll come to you."
And she shouted as he jumped on the bus,
"I promise."
All the way back to Scotland by bus and two trains, her words kept ringing in his ears. But by the time he reached home, his love had turned to cynicism.
"What a mistake to fall in love with someone I could never have."
Life in Scotland wasn't easy for Craig. The hands were healing well, but he had developed a habit of speaking with his hand cupped over his mouth to hide the lower part of his face. And the stutter had reasserted itself, especially when his mother reintroduced him to any of her friends. Women he considered boring and had always tried to avoid as a boy. He seldom went out, hating the sympathetic stares he got in shops and buses. In the hospital, he had been one of many. Now he felt he stuck out like the proverbial sore thumb. Little old ladies would pat his arm and tell him how much they appreciated what our brave boys are doing for us. But he was painfully aware that no young girls in his own age group ever approached him. Rather, they turned their heads away or gave him an embarrassed smile. If only one of them could look him straight in the face and talk to him, like Pam used to do. But the thought of her was too painful, and he would suddenly come out with an expletive to thrust her from his mind. Which worried his mother, especially as he would refuse to explain these sudden outbursts. She began to wonder if, as well as his physical injuries, the trauma had affected his mind in more ways than just his speech difficulties. In Scotland, the name Philippa was thought to be rather grand for a working-class family. But in a way, she had lived up to it. She had trained at Teachers College after 3 years at Glasgow University and proved a very successful English teacher, but only for 2 years when she had married Stanley Stebbings, an accountant. Once married, she was obliged to resign her much-loved teaching job, which had angered her. The births of her two children had relieved the boredom. First Irene was born, followed a year later by Craig. Then, when war broke out, there was an immediate shortage of teachers, and the marriage ban was overlooked. But she hadn't returned to her profession till Craig went to the RAF. At university, some of her close friends had started calling her Pippa, as her mother had done. But when they all parted after university, she had never heard it again until David had started using it as his pet name for her. She feared he was trying to establish a familiarity that she must not allow to grow. For Craig, the worst aspect of the coal shortage was having to share the one heated room with his mother. He knew this intelligent woman was trying to do her best for him, but although she had kept in touch with letters while he was in hospital, there was no way she could fully understand all he had been through, especially his feelings for Pamela, which were still in turmoil. So they had little to talk about. Here were two people who loved each other dearly, both trapped and bewildered.
Thank you.